Good morning, I think, right? It's February the 5th, 2020, just after midnight. Is it morning? Is it evening? Or is it something else? Yes, it is February the 5th, just after midnight. Yesterday was what? Tuesday. But today is going to be Wednesday, hump day. That's great news. Yes, today is February the 5th. February the 5th, 2020, just after midnight. Yeah, what the fuck? First up, topic-wise, this Iowa caucus looks stupid. Now, me personally, I don't vote, so I don't really give a shit who won, but it looks really stupid. It's kind of one of those situations where if you're a Democrat and you spent the last couple months telling people how evil and corrupt Trump is and how he and Putin stole the election in 2016, fuck. But then there's Pete Buttigieg and the quality control issue. Fuck. They had a quality control issue with their app that was what? Produced by a company called Shadow. That's not at all, fucked up, Pete. Mayor Cheat, Mayor Pete. So I have no idea who won the Iowa caucus. I'm not even sure anybody knows yet. What I can say though, if you're one of these people who wanted to simplify the world into we good, they bad, hopefully this taught you the lesson that maybe the world isn't that fucking simple. But really, I don't think so. I think Americans are becoming so crazy. They're getting into their crazy. They're doubling down on their crazy. They're tripling down. It's 2020 and we're still looking for Putin under our bed, people. That's pretty fucking stupid. Yeah, so anywho, it looks like Iowa caucus, the caucus was fucked up, and I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised. The whole Bernie Sanders thing is one of these multi-layered jokes. In 2016, I don't think Bernie Sanders had any expectation of being the Democratic nominee for president. In 2020, I don't think Bernie Sanders has any expectation of being the Democratic nominee for president. That's not his purpose. His purpose is to keep the really, what I would say, more or less true believers in the left agenda from leaving the plantation. Bernie Sanders is a sheepdog. Bernie Sanders is designed to keep the discontents within the Democratic Party from leaving. That's all. And he knows it. He knows it. And he also knows that no matter how well he does in the primaries, he is not going to be the Democratic nominee. So it's a sham. But I think a lot of people don't realize how much of a sham it is. And I'm sure he's going to do little videos saying, I wanted the real results. I want the real numbers from Iowa. Well, okay. But that really is just drama. It's just acting. I will say that right now it does look like the narrative. I'm not going to say the establishment because I have no fucking clue who or what that is, but it looks like the narrative is really, really wanting Elizabeth Warren. It looks like that's what the narrative wants, is Elizabeth Warren. Or maybe even some type of Warren Biden ticket. And I just don't see how that story resolves to either Warren or Biden being president. I don't like Trump, but as far as stories go, Warren and or Biden suck. They don't have very good stories. It's the same old crooked political trash, Hunter Biden and his cocaine. And then there's Elizabeth Warren. And yeah, I'm gonna have to say this. If you spend a few decades telling people you're a Native American, You're going to have to deal with that shit. I'm sorry. You just don't get to come out and say, well, I'm really sorry for doing this, but now all is forgiven. No. No, no. No, 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 no. You don't get to do that, Elizabeth Warren. That would be kind of like, you know, I don't know. It would be sort of like one of the descendants of Adolf Eichmann trying to claim that they were descendants of someone who died in the Holocaust. It's the same kind of fucking bullshit. And the fact that she gets a pass on this is disgusting. It is horribly disgusting. She used this bullshit multiple times in her career. She used this bullshit to get into schools. She, you know, basically to get into universities she wasn't qualified for. Oh, so sorry. She used this bullshit to get jobs, probably. In fact, if you investigate this, I think you'll find the traces of Cherokee Elizabeth Warren all over her fucking career. Yeah. She's kind of like gross. And Biden is just as gross. Okay, so either one of them being the Democratic nominee pretty much guarantees that Trump will be president. I mean, that's just it. No matter how gross Trump is, no matter how disgusting, you don't counter that with more disgusting. And Biden and Warren are disgusting. Sanders will never be the Democratic nominee. So I just basically told you those three people cannot be president. I'm not saying one of them won't be running. It probably will be Warren at this point, but they can't win. You know, unless, of course, the narrative has to switch. And again, this shit changes on us all the time. The key thing about the story, it isn't about democracy. It's about keeping enough people from basically going crazy and revolting. All they want is to maintain a lid on the pot. That's it. So whoever ends up winning in 2020 has to be the person who keeps the lid on the fucking pot. Trump, like Obama, kept the lid on the pot. Yeah, he pissed off people. So did Obama. But he also basically satiated the deep desires of a bunch of people who would have said, you know, oh, I was, you know, part of the Tea Party. I supported, you know, fucking Ron Paul, blah, blah, blah. I listened to QAnon every fucking day. Trump's purpose is to keep those people from basically bailing. Just like Sanders, just like Obama, his purpose is to keep people in line. And as long as he does that, as long as he keeps people in line, Democrats, for the most part, are hardcore statists. I mean, you take away the government from Democrats and they go into a state of shock. So you don't really need much to keep Democrats obeying the system. It's a lot of these Republicans who actually believe they live in a free country that might be the problem. So as long as Trump is the guy that maintains the control, I think he gets elected. If all of a sudden control slips on him, somebody else wins. Right now, we're in a very interesting time. So the last couple days have been interesting from a market perspective. I would contend that the amazingly outrageous behaviors of Tesla in the market are in part due to this. Like, okay, so basically, here's the deal. Whether or not the coronavirus situation is real or not, and we'll talk about that before this podcast is over, the coronavirus has become an excellent excuse for on-demand money printing. Now, if you follow recent market events going back to September, in September there was an issue with liquidity among some banks. Some people think JP Morgan Chase, truly, who the fuck knows. And the results were the repo markets became overloaded. You know, too many requests for short-term funding. So starting in September, our good friend Jerome Powell began a process of what we could call robust repo. Robust repo, providing a lot of money, you know, over a short period of time, so that these banks don't end up having problems. Thank you. Yeah, a robust repo, and this has been going on for a few months now. So, in the last few days, there's reason to believe that not just China, but the Federal Reserve, the European Central Bank, and probably just about every central bank on planet Earth, in the last 72 hours, has been pumping a lot of cash into the markets. And so Tesla, when you look at Tesla, you got to think of it this way. Imagine the world economy is a dead body. Imagine the world economy is either a dead body or a body nearing death. Imagine. So we have this body, either dead or near death, and some really intelligent person says, you know, the key to keeping the body alive is to pump blood through it. Because every body I've ever seen has blood flowing through it, therefore, the key to the body is blood. This is kind of how central banks think. I mean, it's like, you know, that motherfucker Ben Bernanke and Timothy Geithner back in 2009 claiming that banks are utilities. What the fuck? Okay, when I was a kid, a utility was like the public water department, the electrical plant, basically garbage, stuff like that. Those were utilities. Banks are utilities? How does that work exactly? Well, you can't conduct business without liquidity. Well, okay. We can't currently conduct neo-Stalinist business without central banks. That's true. As long as we want to do neo-Stalinist mercantilist bullshit, we need central banks. That is true. On the other hand, if we wanted a free country, we would probably want to destroy the central banks. Just a theory. Markets rise on hope for more stimulus, folks. That has been the main headline for more than 10 years. Markets are rising. Markets are going up, buddy. Markets are rising on the hope for more stimulus. Markets are going up today because there's reason to believe there'll be more stimulus. The markets are on a rip today because Ben Bernanke says there'll be more stimulus. Markets are shooting up today. Janet Yellen says we're going to have more stimulus. Yeah, markets rise on hopes for more stimulus. That has been the chief, the only, the commanding headline of the commanding heights of this crooked fucking economy for 10 fucking years. Markets rise on hopes for more stimulus. But I'm telling you, folks, like the jackass who thinks the key to life is simply pumping blood through corpses, this is a bad, bad thing, and this is heading in a bad direction. No one cares because it will last until it doesn't, and when it fails, you will hear screaming and be like, "Oh my gosh, why did people not say anything?" Oh. Well, people did. But these are historical changes, people. I'll let you on a little fucking secret. What we face is so big that being off by a day or a month or even a year, or I would even say being off by a decade, you're still directionally correct in terms of, you know, events that happen once every 10,000 years. And in my opinion, we're facing a 10,000-year event. So exactly the day we pick for when it starts, don't be a fucking moron. It probably already started. You're pumping blood through a corpse at high pressure, and it's going everywhere. It's busting the veins, it's busting out the heart. After 5 minutes, you can see the blood is simply draining from the body. You increase the blood pressure, the tissue itself rips, and more blood is draining out. So someone comes along and says, well, listen, buddy, I see your problem right here. You're not pumping enough blood. So why don't you pump more? If you want to understand the miracle of Tesla in the last couple days, or even some of the other stocks that have been experiencing really strange swings and amazing increases in value that make no sense in any type of universe that's supposed to make sense, what you're seeing is the blood shooting out of the body. What you're seeing is that the central banks are currently pumping so much fucking cash into the system that it has to find a place to go. Somewhere. It has to chase after something. That money will chase after art. That money will chase after sports cars. That money will chase after giant yachts and private jets that go Mach 2. That money will chase after many things, but capital expenditures will not be one. Yeah, the one thing this money will not chase after is reinvestment in businesses or small businesses. Yes, markets rise on hopes for more fucking stimulus. I'm telling you, folks, we're pumping blood through a corpse. That explains Tesla. It also explains that once this money printing stops, everything is over. The only thing that looks like it's alive in the economy right now is all the blood spurting all over the place. And I mean this proverbially, but all the fucking sloshing cash. Listen, when that ends, it's done. It's over. And that's why it cannot end. That's the key here. Moral of the story, when someone says buy the fucking dip, well, on a short-term basis, you should do that. But on a long enough timeline, as Zero Hedge often says, right, and Chuck Palahniuk, on a long enough timeline, everyone's dead. On a long enough timeline, it doesn't matter how big your portfolio is or your ass. On a long enough timeline, I don't care that your wife was a supermodel when you married her. She's an old hag now. On a long enough timeline, your car blows up. Everybody dies. Period. So let's do the plague update, since we've already talked about hopes for more stimulus being the key economic message right now. There's a lot of hopes out there for more stimulus. That's the ticket. Plague update, and this is an update from technically yesterday, because today is Wednesday, even though it's just barely Wednesday, right? Barely Wednesday. Barely. Headline, and this is again off of Zero Hedge, published Tuesday, February the 4th. At around 6 p.m., Japan confirms 10 novel coronavirus cases aboard quarantine cruise ship. Hong Kong warns virus could spread widely as death nears 500. Here's a summary of the updates. Global confirmed deaths are almost 500, currently 492. Confirmed cases in mainland China are close to 25,000. There are 185,000 and change under observation in China and elsewhere. Chinese authorities have enforced full community lockdown in Nanjing province. That sounds pretty fucking serious. American Airlines, Cathay Pacific, and Jetstar close routes to China. Taiwan tightens travel restrictions. The World Health Organization infectious hazard chief says outbreak, not a pandemic. Well, is he the Baghdad Bob? I don't know, folks. I don't know. Japan confirms at least 10 cases as stated on board the Diamond Princess. I love that name. That's a great name for a cruise ship, the Diamond Princess. And Kudlow, I believe Kudlow is Trump's chief economic strategist. Kudlow says the impact on the U.S. economy from the virus outbreak will be limited. However, Kudlow did confirm on Tuesday that the impact of this virus upon his cocaine consumption will be unlimited. Kudlow will consume at least 10 kilos of cocaine in 2020. He promises this. 10 kilos. Yeah, that's basically the update. There have been some really creepy videos coming out of China, out of Wuhan. Some of the videos show people being shot, or really just after they've been shot by local enforcement squads. That's kind of fucked up. I included in the notes a link to a Twitter account. I still have an account on Twitter that I created last fucking month, and you know what? I'm gonna play that one as long as it survives as a kind of way to retail the fucking podcast. Some days, people, some days I wake up and I wonder. Some days I wonder, folks. Sometimes I wonder. Yeah, so the link is to a video of a woman who was just shot, and this same Twitter account has a lot of other videos on it. It's all pretty much in Chinese as far as notes go, the text, so you have to translate. But the videos are chilling. People being shot, people being hung. Supposedly, they're really cracking down in China on people not obeying the quarantine rules. And you know, that's a whole nother deal too. I don't know what to say about that. I really don't know what to say. If this is something that's going to be a pandemic, let's just talk about that for a second. If this is a pandemic, which means it's a contagious disease that will spread around the world, and it'll spread around the world quickly, then I would expect to start seeing a lot of cases here in Seattle pretty soon. But the thing is, I just don't know. Who are we trusting about this? Who are we trusting? Who are we listening to? Are we trusting the Chinese government that they're telling us the truth? Well, I don't know if I would trust that. Are we trusting that the United States government will tell us the truth? I wouldn't trust that either. So who do we trust as far as to tell us that this is either not bad or bad or somewhere in between? I don't trust any of them. Here's what I do trust. I trust that the interests that our government serve does not include me. So whatever those interests are, whether they be economic, military, I don't know, could be the state of Israel. I really don't know. But whoever has the ear of President Trump, that person is more likely to be told the truth than I would. But let's think about this for a second. This could be bullshit. But what is not bullshit is the economic contagion that's already been triggered. The fact that the central banks are having to have to go into the markets like this right now in such an aggressive way indicates that the economy wasn't that strong before this happened. In fact, come on, let's go back. September. Are you guys telling me that this was already a thing in September? I mean, the best evidence is that the first infections occurred in December. So a few months before this even began happening in Wuhan, we had problems in the economic system. So I don't know how to interpret this. This could be a real thing. It could be a real thing that was created, that was caused to cover up something else, to cover up the fact that the world economy is imploding. I don't know. But like I said, they're not going to tell us. They're not going to tell you and me. Come on, man. Don't be crazy. They're not going to tell us. They're not going to tell me. So what do we believe here? Do we believe they're pumping money into the economy like gangbusters because of a real virus, or are they doing this because the virus provides them cover to do it? That's the question you need to meditate on, because the answer to that question is going to tell you how real this virus is. And even then, it's hard to know what the truth is, folks. But the pictures, the videos I'm seeing out of China, if they are accurate, leads me to believe that this threat is being underplayed in the West. It's being downplayed. In fact, people are complaining right now that there's some type of racism involved in blocking flights and all this other crap. I think that's a fucking psyop too, okay? Just to keep people basically saying, don't worry about it, nothing to see here, it's like the flu. Well, what if it's not like the flu? And what if the reason why they're telling us it's like the flu is because they already know this? So let's talk about some horrible fucking disease I just invented in my head. Imagine a highly contagious version of something like the flu. But it doesn't kill you fast. It's not like Ebola. First, you're going to carry this virus around for a couple weeks, maybe a week. And for that week, you will be infected and you will be contagious, but you will not be symptomatic for 7 to 10 days. You go to lunch with friends. For those 7 to 10 days, you go on a trip to Disney World, fuck, maybe even the Super Bowl. And you go to church, maybe twice, right? If it's 10 days, if the window is 10. You go to church and you shake hands, you hug your minister. And then you start getting sick. And it's not so bad, you say. It's just a sore throat. I just got an upset stomach. Just a little bit of diarrhea. A little bit of coughing. I can't really breathe very well. But here's the thing, even in that phase, the phase of being sick, so let's say phase one, which lasts 7 to 10 days, is you being infected and being contagious, but you're not sick. And then for two to three weeks, maybe even up to a month, you're sick, and then you die. You see, The thing you need to be considering here is the possibility that there could be a 2 to 3 week lag time in mortality with this illness. Or another way of putting it is just don't focus on dividing deaths into the total infected. That's not going to give you the right number for mortality. We may not know the real mortality rate for another month. If this is real, we still might not know. Because unlike Ebola, this might not kill fast. This could kill slow. This could kill so slow that a person might get better and then they leave the fucking hospital, they get sick again, then they die. That is the worst case scenario for me, is that this is some type of shitty bioweapon that is designed to be immune system sticky. Kind of like the AIDS virus, something that's almost impossible to get rid of. That would be fucking horrible. And in that scenario, we don't know the mortality rate. Right now, you look at the numbers that they're giving us, the numbers of dead versus recovered, and then you look at infected, these numbers don't look that great. What it's telling me right now is that if this kills you, it takes a couple weeks. It doesn't kill you. The people it kills, it doesn't kill instantly. It's almost like, yeah, it's the worst flu you'll ever get for the rest of your life, which will be 3 weeks. Or you might recover, but with complications, you might recover with disabilities. You might recover, and your immune system is so trashed that some cancer kills you a year later. Yeah. So I don't think we know shit yet, to tell you the truth, about this whole fucking virus ordeal. I had a crazy idea the other day, and I think it is crazy, because it probably wouldn't work, and even if it could work, it probably wouldn't be allowed. But in recent years, as an anarchist, I've explored the idea of trying to find a way to build communities outside of, you know, the system. I don't know that that's even feasible at this point. I think it might be futile and dangerous. You know, there was this couple. I don't even know what happened to them, but there was this couple about 7-8 months ago that got caught in Thailand, in the waters off of Thailand. They were seasteading. And if you don't know what seasteading is like homesteading, but homesteading the ocean. The thing is, though, all the governments and all the corporations have carved up the ocean. So there probably is not a part of the ocean that you could be on right now and say you have a right to be there as an ordinary person on planet Earth. If you're a corporation, if you're a government, if you're some special person, you could probably seastead your whole live long day, you know, although in that case, I wouldn't really call it seasteading. But ordinary people, it's going to be like the couple, you know, off the coast of Thailand. They're going to send out their fucking destroyers and blow you to bits. You know, there are many things governments can allow on planet Earth right now. Spontaneous acts of freedom is really not one of them. But here's the thing. Currently, there are these oceanic phenomena called gyres. And what a gyre is, I think actually gyre is Old English for gear. But a gyre, a G-Y-R-E, is essentially like a spinning vortex of water in the ocean. And one of the things this vortex of water does, and it's not spinning fast, it's not like a whirlpool. It's essentially just kind of a slow spinning disk of water. And what this does is it pulls in garbage. Because whirlpools will do this, and this is like an oceanic scale whirlpool. So if you've ever heard of these giant garbage patches, people say there's a garbage patch in the Pacific Ocean the size of Rhode Island. Well, these exist kind of at the center of these gyres. And the gyres, I think they move a little, so they're not technically stationary, but they're relatively stationary, and they don't move that quickly. So here's the deal, folks. Imagine you built a anarchist community around going out to these garbage patches and seasteading them. And let me explain what I mean by seasteading the garbage patch. There are some problems you need to solve, one of which is, how do you take this heterogeneous gumbus, all this crap, plastic, wood, and even metal, because metal that's in the plastic and in the wood, the paper, all that shit. How do you take that shit and process it into materials that could be used to build artificial archipelagos and really floating islands? I think it's theoretically possible. You kind of have to think of it as a basic material science problem. But one solution would be netting. If you could use the stuff you find to build a really, really strong form of netting, you could clump this crap. You could clump it, and you could actually use it as the base buoyancy for building a floating island. It sounds crazy, but why not? If these things are as big as they say they are, why couldn't you bag these things up in units of whatever, 10 tons, 50 tons, 100 tons? And then you'd essentially tie these units together. And once you've built something big enough, you can actually put dirt on it and other materials and build it up. I think this is one strategy. Another strategy would be to process it at a deeper level, although it takes energy, but to process the materials into giant rectangles or giant cubes, cubic rectangles, giant rectangles. Giant structures, giant brick, maybe call it a brick. Imagine a brick is 20 feet long and it's 10 by 10. So it's 10 feet by 10 feet and 20 feet long. And a brick represents all of the processed shit, basically dried out and then sealed within the plastic. So essentially like a big chunk of flotation. So what you do is you process the garbage in the garbage patch into these bricks, and then you connect these bricks together. In fact, you kind of need to think of it like almost like aquatic Lego, but you're not plugging into each other because that's too fragile. It's too stiff. You need something loose. So imagine you could hook these bricks together, but loosely, with a kind of basic sort of connection or chain or loop. Again, you'd be building out essentially an archipelago using the garbage. But once you're done building these platforms, I don't see why you can't fill them with dirt. You know, dirt that you harvest. You could harvest fucking dirt and garbage. And the other thing is this too, if you're smart about the fucking garbage patch, you can separate or develop a basic strategy to separate between things that are quasi-organic and therefore compostable and stuff that would not compost. So there's different strategies. I mean, I know this sounds insane, but who specifically has said they own the garbage? I mean, I wish somebody would. If there's a corporation that intends to go out there, start processing this shit for money, you should start doing it yesterday. But I think if no one wants to do it, it sounds fucking insane. I think seasteading these garbage patches might be the one way you could pull it off. Because, like I said, nobody likes this. If you're actually taking this problem and you're sequestering it and then giving people a place to live, and here's the other thing, it's not just people. If you do this right, these can be habitats. Instead of being a source of toxicity and damage to the oceans, if you do this right, you might be able to build artificial habitats for sea life. So there are lots of options here, I think, for intelligent people who are willing to like treat this as a real... So it's work, folks. It's not going to be easy to do this. But it seems like it would scale up. And, you know, the other thing is this. I mean, if you build an island big enough, but not too big, it could probably be built to survive a serious storm or hurricane. assuming you design it correctly. So when I say go and do this, I don't mean haphazard. You need an engineering team to come up with a strategy. But once you have your engineering strategy and you have, you know, some money to go do it, I mean, here's the other thing too. Imagine, and I'm just throwing this out there, there are materials in the Great Garbage Patch that really aren't garbage. That's stuff that can be recovered and sold. I mean, this is another piece of it too. There may be means of making money off the Garbage Patch that involve more than just building islands. But maybe you can build, essentially, islands and sell them to rich people. Think about that, too. Imagine you got really good at building these artificial floating islands that were also functional habitats for fish, so that, essentially, you've got this floating island. Underneath it, you have the netted material or these bricks. The bricks themselves are being designed so that, you know, plants and other things can cling to them and build out life, right? You want to think that way. You want to think long term, and you do want to make these things habitats for life as well. There's a lot of habitat disappearing for fish. And this doesn't even get into the issue of, you know, ultraviolet radiation and the breakdown of the ozone layer. But if you can provide a kind of safe, shadowed zone in the ocean, you're probably going to create a beautiful habitat for a lot of fish and a lot of creatures. So yeah, you could probably build these islands and sell them to rich people. It sounds crazy, folks, but you see, here's the thing. If you come up with a strategy, like let's say you buy some sort of old ship, an old utility ship, like one of those old ships that are designed to do sea salvage. So you have your salvage vessel that you're converting, and that's your kind of recovery, your discovery slash maybe, what would be a better word for that? Call it your scavenger vessel. And then you have another vessel, call it your processor. And your processor could be like an old cargo vessel converted by an engineering team to process garbage, essentially to separate, segregate, process, and build out these bricks, essentially, these big bricks that are essentially flotation devices, but they are also ways of sequestering the garbage because you're using the garbage. Essentially, what I would do is a base approach. I would separate plastics, metals, and stuff that's organic, compostable. The organic compostable stuff, I would do my best to manage that, right? But you probably want to save that because that will be usable too in terms of building out life on the top of these artificial islands. The metals, who knows? I mean, that's its own issue. Another thing too is risk. Like if you go do this, one thing I would say, a lot of the garbage patches could include a lot of shit from the 2011 tsunami. And not just Japan, but other places that were hit too. And including Japan, there could be stuff in the Great Pacific Garbage Patch that's radioactive. So if you do this, you also need to be familiar with heavy metals, chemical toxicity. You can't just do this haphazardly, not unless you want to get cancer or something. But yeah, it sounds crazy, but what if you could seastead, homestead if you prefer, but seastead the garbage patch? And you could build these islands and then sell them. You could sell them as basic platforms. And you know, maybe that's your main revenue model. And then you've got this organic material. I'm not sure what you do with it, but maybe you can convert it into fuel. So AJ and I did a podcast today, first in a series of podcasts we're going to do related to time travel. And just so you know, we do the best with the technology we have. We're using Skype. The audio tends to come out as mono, analog, basic stereo, not that great single channel, but it's okay. My equipment's not great, but as I make more money, I hope to up it a little bit. If I can make money doing this podcast thing, it's a big question mark, because currently I make a little, but it would be great to make, enough to survive here in Little Saigon, as long as survival is a thing to worry about. But AJ and I were talking about the seasteading thing too, because one of the things that's come up with both of us is this desire to find a flexible strategy for survival under conditions where predicting the next thing that's going to happen, becomes almost impossible. I'm not sure that such a thing exists for people like us. Like, I would say if you had a lot of money, you'd probably explore diesel electric submarines. Diesel electric submarines are really quiet ones, and maybe you just live on a submarine if you had tons of money. Live on a diesel electric submarine because for a storm, you can go under the water. And you can always, make your diesel using biodiesel. And a lot of these modern diesel electric submarines, especially the ones that use hydrogen peroxide to extend power underwater, well, they're actually pretty fucking quiet. So, in fact, they're quieter in a lot of cases than our nuclear submarines. And so, yeah, get yourself a nice diesel electric submarine from the Germans, outfit it for civilian use so that nobody gets all pissed off. I might even paint it yellow. So what do you guys think? Seasteading the garbage patches. And the other thing is this, there's lots of these garbage patches. There's a few, well, there's not lots of them, but there's a few of them. There's a few of these places in the oceans, these big gyres, where they're just huge garbage patches. So yeah, maybe you seastead the Pacific one first. Maybe you pick the one in the Atlantic Ocean. I don't know. It all sounds crazy until it's done, but here's my question, human beings. Do you think we can just dump shit in the ocean forever? I kind of think something needs to be done about this garbage, unless the basic strategy is this: party, party, party until everything explodes. And I gotta say, I currently think that is the strategy of the human race. Party, party, party until it explodes. Before we end today's podcast, or I should say this morning's, it's just after midnight. Cut me some fucking slack. We need to try to have feel-good stories now. In the last few weeks, we've had some feel-good stories about monkey herpes. That was a good story. The rat house, the house where the woman trained her rats to kill her neighbors. That was a really good feel-good story. But I've got another feel-good story from a listener. This article comes from the Review Journal, the Las Vegas Review Journal. The date of this article is February the 4th, which would be yesterday. Yesterday at about 9 p.m. And the authors of this article are Max Mikor and Glenn Pewitt. Okay. And headline, sex dolls. Hold on. Headline, sex dolls experience raises eyebrows in Las Vegas neighborhood. I'd rewrite that headline. Sex dolls experience raises eyebrows in Las Vegas neighborhood. And we read on. Holy shit. Neighbors and county officials are concerned about the existence of an alleged sex doll brothel and sex club operating in central Las Vegas neighborhood. According to its website, Las Vegas Sex Dolls Experience offers customers the chance to spend time interacting with sex dolls, and that's in quotes, interacting with sex dolls in a private room at an undisclosed hourly rate. Fuck. Private room. Fuck. Sex Dolls Experience does not appear to be licensed in Clark County and operates out of a fluid gender social lifestyle club called The Studios at 5150 South Pecos Road near Tropicana Avenue. Well, that sounds kind of sexy. Cindy Robbins lives in a home just down the block from the studios. She said she's heard rumors that the building is a sex club and is concerned about living near the property. And I quote, "I think it's sick and it's wrong that it should be anywhere near a residential area," Robbins said. "We've got apartments and houses on the other side of the road, on the other side of Pecos, and we've got houses over here with children. It shouldn't be allowed, and I didn't think by law it was." Oh, wow. A spokesman for the county said the Studios is under investigation by Clark County Code Enforcement on suspicion of operating a business without a license. County records show that the Studios was licensed in 2016 to operate as an educational institution under the name Fluid Lifestyles Learning Center, but it advertises itself online as a private residence that the owner or owners uses as a social venue. Photos from the studio's website showcase rooms outfitted with beds, couches, televisions, at least one stripper pole, and bondage equipment. Fuck. Robbins said that on Friday and Saturday nights, club attendees park in front of her home and others in the neighborhood. The studio's website warns that cars parked next to the fire station across the street from the building will be towed. And I quote, "I don't know these people, and I don't know what kind of people they are," she said. "And I know they are not here to visit people in the neighborhood because you see them walking on up to the club." A representative of the studios could not be reached for comment. Sex Dolls Experience declined to comment and made several changes to its website after being contacted by the Las Vegas Review Journal. Fuck. At first, its website invited customers to, and I quote, "indulge in the ultimate sexual experience." But the next day, it stated that Sex Dolls Experience allows prospective buyers to try, quote unquote, sex dolls before purchasing them. Well, that's nice. I want to try my sex doll before buying it. I didn't do that the last time, and I got married. On Wednesday, a What to Expect section of the website described an appointment with one of the dolls, including meeting a host on arrival, picking out a doll, wig and costume, and being escorted to a reserved room for a pre-negotiated period of time. On Thursday, only the description of the meeting a host remained, and the rest was replaced with, "We are not a brothel." Okay, didn't do nothing. Other neighbors said they weren't too worried about the club, because they go, aside from issues with parking and litter. Elaine Pierce lives in a home near the intersection of Reno Avenue and Pecos, not too far from the studios. She said she's more concerned about homeless people squatting under some trees near her home. "We don't have any children here. My youngest is 32, Pierce said. A licensed sex worker living in Las Vegas recently spoke out against the sex dolls experience. Roxanne Price is concerned that sex dolls could prove to be stiff competition for her and other sex workers in Nevada. Yeah, I'd include that in all the wives. Prostitution is illegal in Clark County, where Las Vegas is located, but licensed sex workers can work at legal brothels in neighboring counties. Price, 25, works in Pahrump. Hey, it doesn't... what's his name? Coast to Coast AM? Art Bell. Doesn't he live in Pahrump? Wonder if he knows Price. Sex workers in Nevada are required to pass a background check. Well, that's good. Undergo weekly testing for STDs and pay out of pocket for their doctor's appointments and licensing fees. And I quote, "While human prostitutes are mired in legal red tape, doll brothels don't have to worry about complying with any restrictive legislation," Price said. "It's as if sex dolls and sex robots have more rights and freedom than actual sex workers." Okay, so I'm going to leave a link to the article in the description of this podcast, but listen, folks, that's your feel-good article for today. You know, you say, "Well, Dan, why don't you give us feel-good stories?" Well, I told you about the monkeys with the herpes. I told you about the crazy lady that was training her rats to destroy her neighbors. And now we know about the sex doll experience. And as a 50-year-old man in Little Saigon without a wife or a girlfriend, I've given serious thought to the sex doll experience. If you listen to this podcast and you enjoy it, and you've already paid for your food, your water, your shelter, you've fed your French bulldog and your cat, you've purchased all the monkeys with herpes you need, you've already trained your sewer rats to destroy your neighbors, and you're saving up for a sex doll, but all this is taken care of, and you've helped out your friends and your loved ones and your sex dolls, and your sewer rats and your monkeys with herpes, and you still have money left over after all that. And you're not dead yet. Yeah, you might got the virus. Because you could be asymptomatic, you fuck. But if you do have the virus and there's a 1 in 5 chance you'll be dead in 14 days, then why wouldn't you just give me all your fucking money? And before you say, "But Dan, I have a will. I have a will and testament. My money is for my African gray parrot named Charlie Pants." Yes, my friends, if you've taken care of all your needs, to include all your monkey herpes needs, then feel free to donate to my podcast. I have a link to Venmo or PayPal in the description of this individual podcast. There will also be a link to Venmo and PayPal on my SoundCloud homepage that you can reach conveniently at imsully.com. I don't currently retail sex dolls. I can't sell you a monkey with herpes. And you know what? I've never trained sewer rats to kill people. But what I will be willing to do is take your fucking money, if you got it. Anywho, for this Wednesday, hump day, February the fucking what? What is it again? February the fucking 5th, Wednesday, 2020. Now it's like 1 a.m., fuck. Well, that's like early morning still. Time to get up and go get your sex doll on. Time to get up and work at the garage so you can buy your sex doll. Time to go wrangle up those monkeys with herpes. They're worth a lot of money, buddy. You can sell a monkey with herpes online now. Now that the market for, you know, bat soup has dried up, yes, now that they're not selling bat soup any longer, yep. Now that you no longer can get the bat soup you used to enjoy, well, it turns out that there is a great substitute to bat soup, and it's monkey herpes soup. If you can harvest monkeys that have herpes, you have to boil them to a certain temperature, of course. You don't want to eat your monkey herpes monkeys raw. But once you've cooked them to a certain tasty temperature, and you've got them all savory, it turns out that monkey herpes soup is better than bat soup. It's also probably better for you. That's if you cook it long enough. Yeah, I don't know, folks. Currently, I'm still feeling okay, just to let you know. I don't have a fever yet. I haven't noticed any additional blood in my stool. Of course, there's always some blood in your stool, but I haven't noticed any more. If I notice anything, I'll let you know. If I start feeling sick, I hope you're feeling okay. And if you're not feeling okay, vitamin C, rest. Get yourself some water. Get yourself some soup made out of monkey herpes.